This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is Wes Naylor. Wes currently serves as president and managing partner of the Cohen Naylor Group, which provides a full spectrum of consulting services in the modeling, simulation, and training domain. Wes, a retired U.S. Navy captain, has served his country admirably with over two decades of increasing responsibility and distinguished service before transitioning into the private sector. Wes's final position in the Navy was commanding officer of the Naval Air Warfare Center. In this capacity, he headed up the Navy's principal center for research, development, testing, evaluation, and support of naval training systems. In this role, Wes developed and planned executive learning and cultural initiatives to transform a 400,000-person organization. Success in this area led to Wes being involved in consultation projects for the White House, Department of Defense, and the Department of the Navy. Wes also serves as an adjunct professor in business at the Crummer Graduate School of Business at Rollins College, where he works in the field of leadership. Welcome to the studio, Wes. It's a privilege to have you here.
Well, thank you, Sam. I appreciate you having me in today.
Good. We're going to focus a lot on your military experience, but the first thing is I'd like to express a thanks for all that you've done in the service to your country.
Well, Sam, that's greatly appreciated. But, you know, as we always say to folks, you know, the honor was truly ours to serve. It was a tremendous opportunity to be able to be an ambassador for the United States and to be with the young men and women who put on the cloth of our nation and go forward to serve. Because
awesome.
That's what service in the armed forces comes down to. It is about service.
Awesome. Well, our listeners tune in because they're interested in leadership, and that I believe that the military is one place where leadership is developed in a way that is outstanding, and that people leave the military with great insights about leadership. So tell us a little bit about your military experience.
Well, you know, I didn't join the military to have a career in it. It's not something I was thinking about. In fact, if you remember the old Navy recruiting slogan, join the Navy and see the world, that's right. In large part why I got in. I was a 23-year-old young man, had come out of school and had never been outside the Continental 48. I won't say that the movie Top Gun got me to be a Navy pilot, but it did come out right around that time.
Love that.
Joining the Navy and having a chance to learn to fly and see the world, that sounded really exciting and appealing to me. But the longer I stayed around, the more I discovered personally, it was less about being a pilot and more about being a naval officer and a leader that really attracted me. And the opportunity to impact the lives of young sailors and help them find their role in life and their course in life, that's what kept me in for a career.
So when you talk about being in charge of or in command of the training center for the Navy, what was the focus of your mission?
Well, it was very broad-reaching. We had two core missions, I would say. The first is as a research institution, where we were charged to look 20, 30 years out into the future, using the science of learning, industrial psychology, all the disciplines that you would use to figure out how to get knowledge into someone's brains, how to transfer knowledge, and figure out how we were going to train the sailor of tomorrow. We had to remember that the sailor of tomorrow, you know, was a high school student today, was going to be our leaders 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. And the people who were being born today were going to be using the technologies we were looking at today. So we had to align those things properly. The other piece was managing the day-to-day piece of that and the acquisition, because that's a long cycle too. And that's really the business side of the Navy. And we always used to say, well, the Navy is not a business. It does have to practice business disciplines in certain areas. Acquisition, which is what we were involved, was one of them. We execute over $1 billion a year in projects, everything from flight simulators to courseware, game-based virtual environment, intelligent tutoring, so that we could figure out ways to make our sailors more effective and our training more efficient.
So when you think about this idea, how many people were involved in this mission?
At our location here in Orlando, we had a team of just about 1,200, a good-sized team, tremendous professionals of all disciplines. We had 550 engineers, anywhere between 50 and 70 PhDs in various disciplines. program managers, contract officers, logisticians, really a full spectrum of talent.
And managing all those people, leading all those people is a very complex activity, I'm sure.
It is, you know, and I've always viewed it in leadership, you know, what your real responsibility is to provide strategic guidance and vision for the organization, and then enable a culture that allows those people to take ownership and perform. That's the trick, is trying to get out of the way of everybody to allow them to use their own energy and their own ideas to achieve what that vision or goal is.
You have an interesting story that you shared with me about Disney executives.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you share that with the listeners?
Well, being that we're here in Orlando and being that we were the Navy's only research center that focused specifically on learning, we would get in senior executives from the Navy, from the Department of Defense, from the Congress, we had senators, and we had the Chief of Naval Operations down here because we were involved with an effort to re-engineer the learning for 400,000 people. And he wanted to see how we were doing it. And we had all of our great team in there. We went through our briefs and he was very impressed. And at the end of it, he sat back in his chair a little and he said, you know, Wes, this is great. Your team is doing great things, but we're here in Orlando and there's really one question that I want answered. And I said, well, what's that, sir? He says, I want to know how Disney does it. And I laugh because that's the question that everyone who we briefed about what we did there asked. You're in Orlando. How does Disney do it? Now, fortunately, I was able to laugh and look back at the Chief of Naval Operations and say, sir, you know what? Less than 2 months ago, the leadership of Disney was sitting in the exact same seat you're sitting in. And you know what their question was? How does the Navy do it?
How does the Navy do it?
Exactly. Because there are some things that the Navy does exceptionally well and the Armed Forces does exceptionally well. And one of those is leadership development and training.
And in order to do that, you have to have a certain type of culture. And I know that you're very big on creating culture as a responsibility of a wise leader. How did you go about creating culture?
You know, one of my big worries and one of the things that I always tried to fight is I was concerned that people would let process and policy substitute for leadership and judgment. Because if you're really going to be a leader, and I would say the difference between real leaders and those who are in positions of authority is accountability. Real leaders accept full accountability, which means they have to make decisions. And sometimes those decisions will go well, sometimes they won't go well. But a real leader takes accountability for that, figures out where the problems were made, and then fixes those by creating an environment where multiple people can release their creativity. That's a risky thing to do because mm-hmm. you have to give up control, which is what process and procedure try to bound. But if you want to get the most out of your people, you have to give them the broadest latitude to contribute in the way they can contribute the best.
So you also, when you think about this training and this training environment, you differentiate between somebody in authority and somebody who is a leader.
Absolutely.
Tell us quickly what the difference is. Everybody who is listening has some type of authority, and now let's reflect on whether or not they're leaders as well.
You know, in the broadest sense of it, as I said, there are certain things that are incumbent, and especially in the Navy model of leadership. And at the top of it is accountability. We talk about this all the time. If you're in a position of authority, you have the legal ability to have people do things, not do things, give them rewards, not give them rewards, to influence behavior. But just because you have that doesn't mean you're using it in the right way or that you're using it effectively. To truly be a leader, you have to also be able to be accountable. You have to be able to release your authority to create the culture where people are allowed to make mistakes. Leadership, doing any job, involves giving people some latitude to make mistakes and learn. Nobody becomes a great leader off the bat. You know, I had a good 12 years of being allowed to make mistakes, which taught me how to make better decisions mm-hmm. to allow me to develop my leadership. I'm afraid all too often people try to control the situation so much, and when you get into that type of environment, it stifles creativity. Now, as a leader who's accountable for results, you have to be able to know where the bounds are. There are certain areas where you can allow your people the latitude to fail and you can exercise loose control. And there are certain other areas, obviously high stakes environments where life or death or damage to high valued items or the loss of a lot of money for a business arrangement, where you have to exhibit a little tighter control. But I would say that tighter control can be effectively done through setting the vision tighter, not by micromanaging. And I think that's the difference between a leader in culture and somebody in authority just trying to get a result.
Good. So if somebody listening to this is thinking about themselves as leaders, would one of the guidelines be, do I make decisions by procedure or do I make decisions by insight? Am I relying on the bureaucratic model to make the decisions or am I actually exhibiting a bit of independence and freedom as I move forward? Is that a fair notion, those two comparisons?
It is. And then, of course, you know, there has to be a blending of those for culture. I mean, when you're dealing with an organization as large as the Navy with 400,000 10,000 people, there has to be some policy and procedure. There have to be general guidelines that we're operating under. It's, you know, multiple layers of statute and regulation. But when you get to the point of execution, you know, at this business unit level, where you're seeing the problems in real time and having to execute in them in real time, getting bogged down in policy and procedure can get counterproductive. Your people have to know where the rule sets are, know where the boundaries are, and then know the conditions where they can go outside of those boundaries to execute the mission. And I think a good leader trains their charges in that way to think freely and know that sometimes you are going to have to break a rule to get the result you want, but know why you're breaking it, know what the safety considerations of that are and what the impacts are. And then you have to be, as I said, accountable when you decide to do that to get the mission done.
Somebody listening to this might be thinking, well, Wes's experience is in the Navy. It's a huge organization, and they need certain things to fit that situation. Can this also be applied to small business owners and the activities that they have to perform, Navy versus small business owners?
Absolutely. Now, you know, in the macro sense, what I would say, what I was just describing is something that we call command by negation, where you put a general rule set together and you train on it. And what it gets down to is you're going to be the person in charge at this point. These are the things you can do unless I tell you you can't do them because there's some safety factor involved. So you create the situation where they're allowed to do that. Now take that down to a store manager at a franchise.
Okay.
Almost the exact same thing. You've got some high-level policy guidelines, but you don't want somebody managing from 3,000 miles away how you're going to adjudicate a customer service issue with a unique individual at a store at the other end of that supply chain. But you want somebody to have the general bounds of what the company policy was and then train them to make those decisions.
Terrific. Very practical. You use the word authentic a lot about leadership and leadership style. How does somebody know what authentic is and how do they put that into action?
You know, in a lot of things, there's as much art as there is science. And I think in management and leadership, this is really an area where this is true. And the conscience comes into this. Mm-hmm. I just truly believe, and I knew it from my first days in the Navy, and I probably even knew it when I was a Cub Scout or a school kid. You can tell by the way someone acts and the way they talk if their actions are matching their words. And you can't fake that authenticity. People will pick up on it. If you're disingenuous, if you're not really doing what you say, if you're telling your people one thing, doing another, no matter how hard you try and hide that or shade that, people at their core are pretty smart mm-hmm. about when people are being authentic with them. And I really believe that people have a pretty good internal mechanism to judge that. And they know when somebody's not really being authentic.
Okay. So the ideas are, is somebody being manipulative? Are they trying to manage a situation almost as a puppet and a puppeteer? Mm-hmm. And how does that move forward? So what's in your heart, if you take that forward in an honest, straightforward way, people know that.
Right. And that, I think they also see what your motivation is. You know, is it self-aggrandizing? Or are you doing things for the good of the organization and the good of those that you're charged with leading? I think that's very easy to discern.
Good. We have a feature in each podcast called Sunday to Monday. And Sunday to Monday basically is, what is a verse or what might you hear from a pulpit that you could easily apply in an organizational setting and something to help you move forward with in a practical way? What would that verse be for you?
Well, Sam, this is a great question, and, you know, I thought about it, and it took me back to a situation where I was in charge of the Navy Ceremonial Guard, where we were responsible for all the activities supporting the President of the United States, and we were responsible for all the ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery, where we were interning those who had served and paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. And I had an officer who, every day before we went out, would recite a verse, and it was Isaiah 6:8. It was, "Also I heard the voice of the Lord, saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, Here I am, send me." And I really didn't understand why he did that every day until I was aboard the organization. I realized that we were sending 18, 19, 20-year-old young men and women out to conduct ceremonies with families where it was their loved one, and it was the final tribute to them, and the amount of emotion that we were subjecting them, how hard that was on an 18 to 21-year-old psyche, mm-hmm. because you're seeing this raw emotion every day. And it's not something that everyone signs up for or steps up for, but somebody has to do it. Somebody has to go and serve. Somebody has to go do the hard tasks. And the true sign of a leader is the person who will step forward and say, "Send me. I'm here to serve. I'm here to get this work done.
That's an awesome first. And I think about someone being in a leadership position in an organization, first of all, wanting to be sent themselves, but then also looking for followers who subscribe to this notion. This is tough. Send me.
Mm-hmm.
This is tough. I need to do it. Help me be in this capacity, and I will serve you. A very practical notion. When we conclude, we're also talking about a pearl of wisdom, and a pearl of wisdom is something that you might like to leave with people who are listening. If they're listening on the way to work, something they can take out of the car with them and evaluate and apply in their own leadership situation. Wes, what would that be at this point?
You know, Sam, we've touched on it already, and I think the thing that I always come back to, and it is unique to the Navy leadership experience, where, you know, back in the days of Thomas Jefferson, you know, you would charge a Navy leader or a Navy captain with responsibility, send them over the horizon with no communications and say, carry out my actions and you will be accountable for what happens. You know, with responsibility and leadership comes accountability. And too many times in the ethics of business and the ethics of modern society, I think we lose that accountability. You know, what is important is that you say, I will do these things, and you do these things. And sometimes that will go wrong. And it's more important, I think it's one of the rarest things we have, whether it's in political or business leadership, no matter where you look, that a leader will step forward and say, I own that decision. I made that decision and it didn't go right. I'm fully accountable for it, and I will repair that situation because that is my bond with my team.
And one of the things that people think about when they think about accountability is that you're responsible if something goes wrong. The other side of accountability is you reap the benefit when something goes right.
Absolutely.
And so there are two sides to accountability. And if you are thinking as a leader, how do I hold my followers accountable? It's not only the rewards that they get, but it's some additional judgment that you need to impose if something needs to change or if there needs to be some control that needs to be exerted. Wes, this has been great. I hate to be the one to have to tell you that time is up. Thank you so much for being here today. You can find Wes with the email address, and let me just spell this out for you, fnaylor@rollins.edu. That's fnaylor@rollins.edu. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. For my book, Chasing Wisdom, today's final thought for becoming a wiser leader, never be arrogant. If you eliminate arrogance in your leadership style, you'll be surprised at what happens. I'll see you next Wednesday. In the meantime, remember, keep chasing. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.